It's Wednesday, the 9th of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, is a no-deal Brexit now all but inevitable?
It is now time for the EU to move to. If it does, then there is still every chance that we can leave with a new deal. However, if the EU does not move, this government is prepared to leave without a deal on the 31st.
British MP Michael Gove was trying to put on a show of strength in Parliament yesterday after reports of a tense telephone exchange between Boris Johnson and Angela Merkel suggested crashing out of the EU was closer than ever. Plus, is Austria's governing coalition about to turn a pale shade of green? And we'll take a trip to Paris to explore an exciting new concept from Chanel. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now.
What we're saying to our friends is this is a very generous, fair and reasonable offer we've made. What we'd like to hear from you now is what your thoughts are. And if you have a if you have issues or with any of the proposals that we've come up with, then let's get into the detail and discuss them.
A telephone call between Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the German Chancellor Angela Merkel has thrown yet more cold water on any notion of a potential Brexit deal. Vincent McAvinney is a correspondent for Euronews. He's on the line from Westminster. Vinny, what do we know about this telephone exchange?
Well, Number 10 has put out a readout of the call in which they say they spoke to Angela Merkel. And a Number 10 source has said that she made clear a deal is overwhelmingly unlikely and suggested to Boris Johnson that a deal would never be possible unless Northern Ireland stayed in a customs union and following the EU rules. Now, the source apparently said that the call was challenging, and that's diplomatic speak for they had an argument, and said that it was the EU's position that a deal is essentially impossible, not just now, but never. And the source went on to say that the EU is willing to torpedo the Good Friday Agreement and was essentially demanding a veto. Now, this call is being widely disputed by the EU and by Berlin. They say this is not what went down. And there are accusations that this is one of the Prime Minister's senior advisor, likely to be sort of Dominic Cummings, who is really trying to spin this narrative of blame on the EU and on Brussels, particularly that line torpedoing the Good Friday Agreement is pretty incendiary.
Vinny, the president of the European Commission, Donald Tusk, took to Twitter yesterday. He gave a very pointed response directed squarely at Boris Johnson. He said, now I quote, "What's at stake is not winning some stupid blame game. At stake is the future of Europe and the UK, as well as the security and interests of our people. You don't want a deal. You don't want an extension. You don't want to revoke." And then he ended with the Latin phrase, quo vadis. Is it fair to say, Vinny, that patience amongst EU leaders really has run out?
Yeah, I mean, pretty pointed to use a Latin phrase at the end of that tweet for Boris Johnson, who's an avowed fan of the classics. It is the phrase that I think St. Peter used towards Jesus when he was trying to go and get crucified. So there is a bit of quite a meaning behind that phrase that he used. But this is, in some people's minds, the strategy of Number 10. They wanted to go through the charade of doing all of this, to put forward a deal that they knew would never fly so that they can turn around and leave without a deal to try and win over the Brexit party. Now, the Number 10 official spokesperson has said playing a stupid game. They said that's absolutely not what they're doing and it's not us talking in that language. But there are those who say, well, this has been the ruse all the way through. This is what Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson have been wanting to do. They've wanted to go through this to make the EU look like they're being the ones who aren't making any concessions, that they're the ones that are making things difficult and laying the blame squarely with them. And we saw that in the communication as well that came out with the editor of The Spectator magazine on Monday night, very much pointing the blame at anyone else around Europe.
Vincent McAvinney on the lawn at Westminster. Thank you. To Austria now, where talks to form a coalition following the recent election could yet take the nation in an unexpected direction.
Austria's conservatives have long had a trailblazing quality when it comes to stealing the thunder of right-wing populists in Europe. The Conservative People's Party first brought the populist Freedom Party into a coalition in 2000, and then won big when the Freedom Party imploded halfway through their term in government. Now, history is repeating itself, as the People's Party, led by Sebastian Kurz, won a major victory in snap September elections brought on by the infamous Ibiza corruption scandal that rocked their erstwhile Freedom partners. It is now up to Kurz to form a new government, and he may be seeking a new ally. In a move sure to give Austria's political watchers a dose of whiplash, Kurz is due to meet Green Party chief Werner Kogler later today. It would be quite the ideological swing, but speculation is rife that Vienna may soon be turning a pale shade of green.
Back on the Eurostar to Paris now, where a new concept by Chanel is giving fashion's movers and makers a whole new look.
It won't come as news that we're fans of the open kitchen. Aside from the drama, flames, energy, and hopefully tasty bites such a setup generates, we also like that a transparent setup demands tidy working practices, polite conduct, and for people to be on top of their game. We feel the same about most businesses, save for banks that like to make a lot of huff about transparency in their architecture, but fail to do the same in daily practice. Yesterday evening, Chanel gave colleagues, collaborators, and media a sneak peek of 19M, a 25,000 square meter facility at the edge of the city that will soon be home to 600 artisans renowned for pleating, embroidery, millinery, and more. Chanel's president of fashion, Bruno Pavlovsky, told Monocle that 19M is unique in the world as it brings together so many craftspeople under one roof. Designed by architect Rudy Ricciotti, the building will be unveiled in a little over a year and marks a further step in the revitalization of the 19th arrondissement. Other luxury goods companies and cities should take note. Not everyone wants to write code, work in service, draw up contracts, or even be a journalist. Just imagine that. There's money and satisfaction that comes with skilled craftsmanship. Chanel just might be sparking a mini manufacturing renaissance in this corner of Paris.
And finally today, Monocle's Andrew Muller asks, what's so special about a special advisor?
It is no easy task identifying the single oddest character ushered onto the stage of British public life during the continuing Brexit circus. Almost as if the process of Brexit is the most absurd act of self-beclowning perpetrated by a serious country in modern times, it has flushed into the spotlight a picturesque array of creatures who would, in less ridiculous times, have skulked and seethed in the shadows. In naming the single most colossal Brexit-related weirdo, there are stout cases to be made for many. Dickensian mannequin Jacob Rees-Mogg, blustering Dad's Army extra Mark Francois, indefatigable spiv Nigel Farage. None, however, possess quite the credentials of Dominic Cummings, presently retained as the principal ideological homunculus of Prime Minister Boris Johnson. There is a makeable argument that Dominic Cummings is the most influential figure in 21st century British history. The question therefore prompted is, well, hang on a second, who is Dominic Cummings? Cummings is what is known in British politics as a special advisor, often abbreviated to SPAD. SPADs are people retained by politicians to provide counsel in whatever their field of expertise, real or assumed or imagined, happens to be. Sometimes they will be people at the beginning of a career in politics who have an eye on a parliamentary seat in future. Sometimes they will be too obviously odd or perhaps just too damn sensible to stand for public office themselves. Cummings probably suffers some degree of both of these disqualifications. He has operated behind the scenes of British Euroscepticism for decades, overseeing a campaign against Britain joining the Euro, a pretty easy win given the absence of clamour for it, and directing strategy for then-Conservative leader Ian Duncan Smith as he sought to become Prime Minister, a pretty forgivable loss given the absence of clamour for that. Cummings also worked in and out of government for prominent Brexiter Michael Gove. Cummings owes his present notoriety to his masterminding of the Vote Leave campaign, which ultimately triumphed in the 2016 EU referendum. His position at Boris Johnson's side may therefore be partly window dressing by the new Prime Minister, hoping to underpin his Brexit credentials. It's hard to imagine the two getting on terrifically well, though Cummings gets on with few people terrifically well, having reportedly called other politicians for whom he has worked such things as Muppets and as thick as mince. Former Prime Minister David Cameron, whose career Cummings effectively ended, described him back in 2014 as a career psychopath. However, even successful and competent British politicians have had advisers on whom they relied. Tony Blair, whose reign as the last Labour leader to win a general election may yet have a while to run, rebranded and reoriented the party under the guidance of Peter Mandelson, who, though an MP and a minister, served a SPAD-like purpose. And Margaret Thatcher, though famously difficult to influence, was heavily influenced by Keith Joseph, who also wasn't a SPAD as such, but a fellow MP, who'd wanted the job that Thatcher got and later served in her cabinet. Keith Joseph later admitted that he wasn't really leadership material. "I hadn't the political antenna," he said, "the political flair." It may also have been that he'd realised by then that behind the throne is where the real power is. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Muller.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Thursday.